go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. Jeremy says loud and clear on TuneIn. Goody, goody, goody. It is a nice thing to know as we begin the program, because sometimes it isn't loud and clear on TuneIn. And on those occasions, I apologize. It's a minute past the hour. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you'll find access and entry to the chat room, where you will find the merry multimedia extravaganza that is the chat that takes place during the program each and every evening. Good evening to Jeremy in Vermont, Jug of Punch, and Texas Tea as we get underway this evening. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, our third stage guild navigator who has folded space to become Man Cave. We are underway. And there's Earther, having wandered in as well. Good to see you. More will be following along presently. It's a fun little group we've got in there. Check it out if never have. Go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and away you go. Alrighty then. It is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday. We reserve these evenings for right-wing schools of thought, lines of intellectual pursuit that make us go, oh! And I think there's bound to be some real thorn in the side potential based on the news that broke today. We're not going to have Kevin McCarthy to kick around anymore. No. Suddenly, and no one seems to really know why, although I confess I have my suspicions, Kevin McCarthy has decided he don't want to be the Speaker of the House. Not at all, no more, no how. Nah. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. So he's going to take his gavel and go home. Hey, there's Waggy in the chat room. Welcome along, Waggy. Good to see you. Are you stateside or elsewhere upon the globe at the present, Waggy? So, anyway, everybody's wondering, why do you reckon Kevin McCarthy all of a sudden up and said he didn't want to be Speaker no more? Now, the conventional wisdom as it's being promulgated is that because of the lunatic fringe, which becomes almost a superfluous phrase when describing the Republican majority in the House of Representatives, wouldn't go along. And that Kevin McCarthy couldn't get the 218 votes he needed, and I guess the Democrats decided to just let him stew in his own juices, so he withdrew his name from consideration. Of course, he's a Republican, and this is just my own private speculation, personal. It's not private anymore because I'm saying it into a microphone, right? Eddie Munster, the zombie-eyed granny starver from Wisconsin. Paul Ryan. Well, he doesn't want to be speaker because he hopes to be president of the new United States of America so that he can starve him some grannies in real, panache here in a few more years. He's a mite young yet to be president, and he got rather of an ass-handing to him recently. Good evening, Labor Man, wandering into the chat room. Good to see you. But he didn't want to be speaker because that's like being, the key keeper to Bedlam at this point. Now, Louis Asparagus Gohmert would love to be speaker. I'm sure Steve Cantaloupe's King from Iowistan would love to be speaker. Unless somebody's feeling prankish, that ain't going to happen either. And, here's my, Republicans, of course, are notorious for their Christian family values, which is another way of saying that they will screw anything that's not moving. And I mean that in a sexual sense. They will put a good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian Republican member of the House of Representatives will stick his anywhere it'll fit, and some places that it won't. Knotty pine trees, and that's Knotty, not Naughty. I mean, they're trees, for God's sakes. Knotty pine trees have to worry when Republicans are out and about. A lot of pine trees in the South where a lot of these Republicans come from, but no, there's reason to believe, unless what I read was just complete parody, there's reason to believe that, a couple of things happened with Kevin McCarthy. One, a member of the House of Representatives by the name of Jones, Walter Jones, from North Carolina stand, who's been in the House for a very, very long time, he's the man who gave us the concept of freedom fries, and then recanted and repented from his vote in favor of the Iraq War, and publicly said that he felt like Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney before he dicks you had lied us into a war, as had the sock puppet that sat on his lap, dim leader George W. Bush. Walter Jones has said that no one should be running for speaker who has any taint. Yeah, he said taint of moral turpitude, or since we were just talking about pine trees, moral turpentine. Mm-hmm. And when a Walter Jones puts that out there, and Walter is not known for swinging from the ceilings of the Mayflower Hotel in Washington D.C., he's one of those rare Republicans who keeps his freak at home. Apparently it's an open secret of about 4 years' length that Kevin McCarthy has been playing hide the salami with a member of the House of Representatives from North Carolina stand by the name of Renee Elmers. It was described in the article that I read as an open secret and everybody knows it. So that might be what Representative Jones was pointing toward when he mentioned the moral turpentine. Apparently, according to the Washington Post, retiring Speaker Boehner has asked Paul Ryan to run for Speaker, but Paul Ryan wants none of it. He sees how it can turn you orange and make a Merlot swilling lush out of you having to deal with the Steve Cantaloupe Kings and Louis Asparagus Gohmerts of the world. Marsha Blackburn. Goodness! So that'll be an interesting little drama to watch sort itself out. Good evening. Good evening to... this is the horn calling the sandbox. This is the horn calling the sandbox. Come in, sandbox. Ah, very, very good. Ron tells me you're coming in loud and clear at the Abu Dhabi airport. Travel is so glamorous, Ron reports. It's 2 a.m. and the flight doesn't leave until 3:25. I plan to be asleep by 3:30. Then I suggest that you do confession with Reverend Craig somewhere between 3:25 and 3:29, and yes, indeed, you will be. And good evening to all our friends in the sandbox. And thank you. You know, this is a listener-supported operation. And so thanks go out. Very hearty thanks to Margaret, who sent a note last night. And it just tickled me pink, because I love hearing from folks. Love hearing from all of y'all. Note said, I love you and Dr. Bill's podcast. I enjoyed your conversation with Ron from Canada, as my husband and I are living and working in the sandbox. How quickly 3 years turns into seven. Thank you again for all the pleasure I gained from listening to the horn. She says, I'm not a subscriber to any social media sites. I hope this ancient form of communication reaches you. It was an email, by the way, ancient form of communication, but that's the truth. My kids don't use email. They, what? Yeah. I might as well ask them to tap me out a message in Morse code. But yes, yes, Margaret, the email reached, and your kind contribution did as well. Thank you. Because we were coming into the evening with a rather significant hole to dig ourselves out of, and yay, thanks to Margaret, that hole's filled in, and we will go about our usual evening's fundraising now, which is wonderful for all intents and purposes. Margaret did have a show on me, and then some. So, of course, we try to raise... $200 every evening. 10 at 20, 20 at 10. 2 at 100, 1 at 200, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12.50, 6 at $33.33. Yeah. And so if you want to help us keep this all going, help keep the bills paid, and there are many of them, I might add, then it is simply a matter of going to headonradionetwork.com, going to the tab called Contribute, ignoring those two fields about who you work for and where they are and how we can find them, because we don't really want to know. That was PayPal's doing, not ours, and they're not necessary. And then get into the next screen. It's always just get to the next screen, and boom, there you make your PayPal, credit card, what have you, decisions. If you prefer to help out via the U.S. Postal Service, well, the mailbox is the part that Boss Man Wayne handles. And checks and money orders made out to the horn should be mailed to the horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. We've still got an equipment fund going on because we are slowly but surely taking care of a bunch of long-needed repairs in anticipation of a glorious day, probably come November, when I'll get to do some guest hosting for our dear friends, the Malloys. The telephone processor unit's big on that list. Oh, yeah. So, there you have it. And, yes, in answer to your question, Irish Dave, doesn't Wally Jones represent the Fort Bragg Military Reservation named for a traitor called Braxton Bragg? He does. A most unloved fellow, even among his own troops, was Braxton Bragg. And a governor of Alabama would later be named Braxton Bragg Comer. Go figure. But then again, we've also got a senator sitting in the Senate of the United States even now, named Jefferson Beauregard Davis. Yes. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Thud. Get it right. Don't forget the Thud. Don't even try to figure it out. You'll just wind up weeping. Why you'd want to name anything at, well, but we named a bunch of military bases after traitors. Fort Bragg, Fort Hood. Yeah. All right. So, like I said, we've got a potential really good start on Thorn in the Side Thursday. I know that Steve, in particular, in New York, enjoyed our digression into the analytical stylings of Christian Kayla Normandin last night. I had to bathe in bleach when that was all said and done. I mean, that I don't agree with this, y'all. I mean, Shiara Law, what? But we got a lot of material to work with this evening. I know I say that a lot, but it's always true. As long as there are Republicans, right wingers, fascists, we're gonna have plenty of material to work with. I mentioned Christian Kayla Normandin, and I'm still trying to figure out if Christian is an adjective or one of her three names. But she don't want nobody learning about no Muslims, as you recall from last night. And remember that she was, of course, in Floridustan. Well, there's another storm a brewing, and I'm not talking about some force of nature like Hurricane Joaquin was. And you know, it still astounds me that thing never came on land and still managed to wreck the bejesus out of South Carolina. What was that term that Carol coined? Shamnesia is still running through the South Carolina contingent of Congress. They can't remember all those times that they didn't want none of them damn Yankees from New Jersey getting any hurricane relief. But anyway, there's a storm, not even brewing. It's already taken shape, and it has beset South Florida. There's a little county in Florida called Wakulla. Maybe it's Wakulla. I prefer to think it's Wakulla. We won't have a debate over it. But Wakulla County, Florida, has a county commission chairman by the name of Ralph Thomas. Mm-hmm. And he put the picture that he took at Mash's Sands, which appears to be a beach sort of place. And the photo he took out there at the sands, maybe it's a lake place because I see trees on the other side. I don't know. But it was of a bunch of men hunched over with their bottoms in the air and their foreheads on the ground. They were Muslim men who were praying to their God. Ralph Thomas, County Commissioner of Wakulla County, simply posted it to his Facebook page and said, "Walked up on this at Mash's Sands this evening, exclamation point. First time seeing this in Wakulla County." Stay out of the comments, but for you, I take one for the team. There were 309 shares and 16 likes. First commenter says, "Doesn't surprise me, I'm telling you, it is scary." Next guy says, "Don't worry, they said. It won't happen here, they said. Good awareness, I say. Thanks, Ralph." Becky Henderson Whaley says, "Praying this is a yoga class." Then Bible scholar Becton James Roddenberry says, "This is a prophecy in the Bible that nations will go into a religious war, but us believers in Christ do not fear, for we know the final outcome, victory in God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Ghost, and we shall all meet in heaven." At least somebody's got a sense of humor, seeing all those men with their bottoms up in the air and their heads on the ground. Magnus DeLacy Peavy said, "Hope a horny bear don't come up from behind." Let's see. Another individual. "Oh, my. Really, Ralph? Can't we have them monitored? Call the FBI or something. Oh!" "We must have just missed you. There were a few of them arriving when we were leaving, but we didn't witness this. Unsettling, to say the least." Because it's unsettling when people pray. Yeah, right, yeah, sure, absolutely. "Oh, it's going to probably have Team Eyewitness News live action coverage down there to Mash's Sands to see if them Muslims come out and pray some more. Because praying Muslims, see, that's what happens when you put 35 pages right there in that world history book about the Muslims, and you don't say something nothing negative about them. The truth!" Yeah, Wakulla County Sheriff candidate Will Dance told WTXL he don't feel too good about none of this year. "I'm raising the question of whether or not a group of military-aged Muslim men are praying on our beach. Well, label me whatever you want. Ignorant, moron, jackass, bigot, freak. Whatever you want. The reason I brought this up is because my daughters use that beach. My wife uses that beach. And gentlemen, under Shiara law, the cutoff shorts and t-shirts that my family wears on that beach are considered offensive under Shiara, and any Muslim man may carry out what feels is fit punishment. And I'm sorry, but that type of behavior cannot happen here." No, really. A candidate for the county sheriff's office in Wakulla County is afraid that Muslim men are going to come up and, I don't know, probably haidlop his precious lumpkin daughter for a wearing the heathen cut-off t-shirts and her cut-off shorts and her t-shirt that shows her belly, her Britney Spears belly button ring. Mm-hmm. Another individual commenting on the terrorism at the beach photo, because you know, just praying to your invisible friend, that's terrorism. Of course, they get to pray to their invisible friend all they want to, because he's a real invisible friend, like not a fake invisible friend. One commenter said, Ralph, the WBCC needs to put up a sign. Warning, bacon grease dumping site. See, that'll keep your Muslims away from your beach. Whereas your Christians just love to go to the beach and waller in bacon grease. And I mean, sand in the Vaseline, baby. So they're all nervous, like down in Wakulla County, Florida. Mm-hmm. Apparently, you want to know the depth of how insidious these Muslims are down there in Wakulla County. You know what they's doing down there at the beach? They wasn't just praying. They was having a barbecue. Imagine that. Muslims having a barbecue when everybody knows they don't eat no pork. Yeah, see how they are? One lady, the mother of one of the men who was at the beach, said he never wanted to be in anyone's spotlight. He was just out there at a barbecue and praying. They see that them Muslims, they even pray before they eat. Heathens, they don't just jump right in. She continued, hatred only leads to more hate. So now are you going to make every Muslim carry a card that says, I'm a good citizen, I'm not affiliated with ISIS, I just wanted to pray? Now, you know, my particular position is that this will be a much better planet when everybody stops praying. Because, see, you can pray all you want, but as the brother of Yeshua once pointed out, faith without works is dead. Stop wasting all your time praying and get to doing, and you might see some things get accomplished. Oh, but by the way, because this is just how it is now, Wakulla County Sheriff candidate Will Dance. Well, Will Dance ain't just, he's not just your Wakulla County Sheriff candidate. He also hosts a radio show. Jesus, host your radio show and just be happy with it, okay? It's probably even on terrestrial radio, because he's a right winger and everything. They get to be on the terrestrial radio. He said, interviewed by a TV station named WTXL. By the way, Arthur says, I'll pray to that, Brother Bob, the stop praying sentiment. Oh, sorry. Yeah, see how easy it is to backslide? But talking to WTXL, Dance said, it's the county's responsibility to make sure that its citizens are safe. And, of course, in typical right-wing fascist form, he claims he has received death threats. Among other things, he said, there's no place in U.S. society for Shari Law, S-H-A-R-I. And there, I thought it was Shiara. If yes, how so? And he's got a video, which I'm sure that, the Anti-Muslim American Center for Law and Justice provided, Sharia versus the Constitution. He's also said, all Sharia Muslims have to leave my country quickly. And the Constitution is the second greatest document ever inspired by our God. Funny how our God could inspire a Constitution that he doesn't even manage to get a mention in. Tough. Oh, we need to put this guy on the list and pay attention to him, Sheriff Candidate Daines. Truth, there it is again. It's so hard to get away from. Throughout my career of law enforcement, fire rescue, and pirate hunting, no, really, one truth was consistent. Radical Islam was always a threat to the way of life that I love. Are you a constitutional Muslim or a Sharia Muslim? Because if you're a Sharia Muslim, I'll kindly ask you to leave my country as quickly and efficiently as you can. Yes, we will watch you until you leave, and we'll give you any assistance necessary up to and including monetary to assist your safe and rapid departure. So if you won't eat a pork weenie, that means you need to leave Merca because you're a Sharia Muslim. Yeah, this is boiled over into a county commission meeting. One lady said that there are rumblings of a Muslim lynching. She said, I've seen posts on social media calling for dousing our citizens in pig's blood. I've seen posts calling for them to be hung from trees because they're not of Christian faith living in Wakulla County because of a picture that you, Mr. County Commissioner, captured. County Commissioner Thomas responded, I am a fortunate man, blessed indeed. I have wonderful friends and family, and I appreciate each of you. I don't regret posting that photo on Saturday. I would do it again. This is America. I know. We prefer to think of ourselves in terms of mom and apple pie and little main streets in small towns and little storefronts that are run by individual business owners who live in a little space right above the store. And how we all just sit around eating homemade ice cream and drinking sweet tea. But that's what we'd like to be, not who we are. Thanks to an insurgency run by the Republican Party and its buddies over in the Tea Party, we are a bitter, ignorant, paranoid, terrified, pants-wetting bunch of Islamophobes and some homophobes and some misogynists. And because, see, you can't be a right-winger unless you got you somebody to hate. Right? Yeah. Yeah, a little geographic help coming in from Jay Cruzen. I hope I heard you wrong, Jay Cruzen says, but I thought at the beginning you said the story South Florida. No, I think I did say South Florida, but apparently I'm wrong. Jay Cruzen says we have our own crazies here, but please don't throw us in with those bigots up there in the panhandle. Thanks. Oh, Wakulla County is in the panhandle of Florida. Okay, it makes sense because that's L.A., Lower Alabama. Because when it comes to bigotry, well, nothing says it quite like Alabama. That's why Florida panhandles Lower Alabama. That's why there's that running gag about Pennsylvania is Pittsburgh in the west and Philadelphia in the east and Alabama in the middle. That's not a compliment in Pennsylvania. See, you got to be careful if you're going to go to the beach there in Wakulla County because they may be some people say, come on over to our barbecue, and then they say, let us pray, and the minute you put your head down on the ground with the rest of them, they lop it off because them Sharia Muslims is deceivers. And see, it's only the Muslims that are a threat to Merca because they've got religious law. The Catholics, with their religious law, you know, divorces and so forth, and not being able to, you know, eat certain, you know, having to give crap up at Lent, and right. You know, that's okay religious law. And Jewish religious law is okay religious law. Because you're law-abiding, Jewish law-abiding person ain't going to eat that pork weenie either. Neither's a vegetarian, come to think of it. I guess that lets the Hindus out, too. Are they all threats to Mecca, or is it just the Shiara lawyers? Yeah, we're going to be busy. Where else? Oh, hey. Remember last night we checked in with Ben Carson and his plan to have undocumented immigrants become indentured servants with no rights to any goodies in America? You know, goodies, driver's licenses, health care, social security, unemployment compensation, you know, goodies. And if you missed it, Ben Carson is also a real live, honest to goodness, might be a hero someday. Because they asked him about the shooting in Roseburg, Oregon, at the college campus that was not a gun-free zone. And Ben Carson, honest to God, he makes me think that anybody can become a world-famous neurosurgeon. Because this guy's a moron. I know it's not Monday, but Jesus. He is a sure enough, straight-up moron. Because you know what the problem was in Roseburg, Oregon, there at Umpqua Community College? Ben Carson says it's because all the people didn't rush the gunman. That they just weren't heroic enough. Whether they had guns or not, if they would have just rushed the gunman, who had God only knows how many guns, if they would have just rushed the gunman, if one of them would have said, well, screw it, I'm tired of being alive, I'm gonna for sure die. Yeah, really. He did. And he's doubling down on it. This morning, he, in an article at The Hill, he told his own tale of heroism. He, Ben Carson. That's why the headline says, Carson, I faced a gunman. He says it happened in Baltimore. And Ben Carson defending the grief that he's taking for saying something so idiotic and just mean-spirited, you know, kind of spitting on the dead. Republicans have no shame. Karen Hunter on SiriusXM Radio interviewed Mumbling Ben. And he said, I've had a gun held on me when I was in a Popeyes. Oh, really? I wish I was kidding. I wish I was making this up. Ben Carson went down to the Popeyes for the midweek big fried chicken deal. I mean, you know what Popeyes is, right? It's kind of, they call themselves Louisiana Fast. It's a spicy fried chicken franchise. I wish we had one here in West Virginia. They do. They do this lovely sort of spicy brown gravy with their mashed potatoes. They got yummy green beans. They got red beans and rice. It's just delightful. And some of them still do fried chicken livers. Now, some of you have gone, ew, but those spicy fried chicken livers are something special. But anyway, in his interview on SiriusXM Radio, he said, I've had a gun held on me when I was in a Popeyes. A guy comes in, put the gun in my ribs, and I just said, I believe that you want the guy behind the counter. The resolution was, he said, oh, sorry. And then he went to the appropriate person behind the register who gave him the money, and he left the store running before the police got there. I wasn't fearful for my life at all. I knew why he was there. No, you got that? There it is. Ayn Randian Republican teabag and philosophy in a nutshell. Guy sticks a gun in your ribs and you go, no, no, no. Please stick the gun in the face of the pimply-faced kid across the counter there. For I am a world-famous neurosurgeon, and I must not die. But if you must kill someone, kill the kid behind the counter. Oddly enough, he didn't rush the guy with the gun. And here's the thorn in the side part. The people who are already committed to supporting Mumbling Ben, this isn't going to change their opinion of him. Now, apparently, in in the rest of the world, if someone points a gun at you, Ben Carson wants you to rush the guy with the gun and get shot. Ben Carson, however, because he's a world-famous neurosurgeon, confronted with the same thing, will say, no, no, no. Just remove your gun from my ribs, please, and go and point it at someone else. I mean, that's Ayn Rand in a nutshell. You know, all of y'all. This was on the Michael Smirkanish program on SiriusXM. See, it was back when he was on Fox and Fiends over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda that he said in regard to Roseburg, not only would I probably not cooperate with him, I would not just stand there and let him shoot me. I would say, everybody attack. He may shoot me, but he can't get us all. Mm-hmm. But you can't shame a teabagger. Because they don't have that highly developed. It's because of that big old giant lizard brain that replaces a human brain in their skulls. You know, the thin gray settlings they've got that slosh around between their ears and pass for brains. Monday night, writing on Facebook, Mumbling Ben said, there is no doubt that this senseless bloodshed is breathtaking. Oh, it's breathtaking, all right, Ben. The last breath. But I never saw a body with a bullet hole that was more devastating than taking the right to arm ourselves away. So he doesn't care how many people get murdered because of our fascination with firearms, Mumbling Ben doesn't. There's not any one of the little children chopped into chutney at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Not one of them were worth giving up a firearm or the right to arm ourselves. That's another way of saying that the children at Sandy Hook, had it coming. This is the guy who is in second place in the Republican polls. Stunning. Just stunning. And this is this is a scary nation. 'Cause it, and I guess some places are scarier than others. Let's run over to Idaho. A school there. Oh my God, that's a huge spider. Time out. Just a minute, please. I got to take her outside. Where'd you go? No. Can't reach her. Dang it. You're not going to like it in here. Go outside. There's lots of good bugs to eat out there. Don't bite me. Please? So, for the rest of the program, this will be the horn. Thorn in the Side Thursday, featuring Bob Kincaid and his friend the spider, who he hopes stays well away from him. I don't want to squish you. Yeah, I went to check on and make sure we were paired up with the stress line, because we'll be opening the lines here in a few minutes. And there she was. I mean, she doesn't look not a black widow or like a the funnel web spider that lives in really deadly down in Australia, but what is it about human beings and spiders? Why do they give us such a monumental case of the creeps? Yeah, Marty says, oh, go ahead and squish the spider from an arachnophobic. No. And besides, she's out of reach now. That's the thing about your spiders. They can go places we can't. Anyway, back to Idaho, if I can focus on the fact that we've got stories to do. Then I'm terrified. Boss, that's one of the ways I found out early on that Boss Man Wayne and I were going to be friends. He's a carry the spider outside guy, too. Anyway, we're talking here about Highland High School. In the Pocatello-Chubbuck School District of Idaho, Stan. Mm-hmm. 15-year-old boy has been charged with threatening violence at a school and telephone harassment. The high school was placed on lockdown after the youngin threatened to kill all the girls He was particularly upset at the cheerleaders. Because and student Isaac Gomez said some kid who was having attention problems with specifically the cheerleaders didn't get nudes. He was asking for some inappropriate things. He went on both Facebook and Twitter saying he said he was going to bring a gun to school and kill all the girl students, and then he shared detailed plans for how he would enter the school and eventually kill himself in the weight room. Said he was going to carry it out tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m. Mountain Time. He said, "I'm serious. I have a 12-gauge shotgun and a 9mm pistol I will bring and start killing everyone. I also have hunting knives I can bring." And he wanted to give the NRA a little bit of cover. We had a knife. Ah, that's an odd. He sent other students at the high school harassing tweets. Most of them were girls. No surprise, the kid also made threats against the life of Barack Obama and made threats against the girls, and then added in some racist remarks about people of color. One of his friends said, "This over freaking nudes? Dude." To which he responded, "Because no one will give me any to me. Everyone hates me. And I hate a girl's name. And I'll kill myself after." Because he wanted dirty pictures, dirty cell phone pictures, which apparently, in this day and age, because I'm a geezer, I'm a little bit astonished, but oddly enough, we gave camera phones to our youngins, and the first things they started doing was taking pictures of their boy parts and girly parts and sending them around as if they were trading cards. And I don't know, Carol. I don't know. Carol just asking the question, and I think it's a trenchant one. What is it with young white males thinking they have a right to every female body? Well, I mean, that's the brand of misogyny we teach in America. I mean, that's the whole discussion about why is it, you know, suddenly we're back to Todd Akin and legitimate rape. That's Idaho. Meanwhile, some schools in Oregon were locked down a couple of days ago because people reported seeing young white males walking around with semi-automatic assault rifles strapped over their chests. Because freedom. Because we are a gutless bunch of people who would rather sacrifice children than say that maybe Cletus doesn't need 52 handguns. He might be able to get by with one. Yeah. It was, remember last night when Christian Kayla Normandin teared up and sniffled when she got to the part where she dropped that article and it was a few Muslims killed girl babies that they didn't want? Mm-hmm. And that was the only negative thing they said about Islam. Well, isn't it ironic? Maybe it's not ironic. Maybe it's just pathetic that we sit here and we look at another part of the world where women have to wear beekeeper suits because the invisible friend in the sky won't love them if women show their faces in public. Oy. And I certainly don't agree with it. But then again, I find most religious strictures of that sort. Wear this hat. Don't wear that on days that end in Y. Eat this. Don't eat that. I find it pretty much stupid. Maybe it worked for people in the Bronze Age. It's not a 21st century thing. But oddly enough, we sit here in America, so many of us, not the Horn Family Commune Congregation, I'm speaking largely of the culture, such as it is. And we feel free to critique. We feel free to critique how other cultures treat women, and yet we can't even come to an agreement. Well, we came to an agreement via the Constitution that women have a right to control the workings of their own bodies, and yet there are millions of people in this country who disagree with that notion, while at the same time saying, see how them Muslims treat the women's? Yeah. Charming, ain't it? Well, okay, so I'm not the only one slightly discomfited by the presence of our friend the spider. Boris, we'll call her. Carol says, I'd be burning the studio down. Raid! I know. Marty also suggested the use of Raid. But then again, you don't want to hear me on the air after I've been huffing a little bit of Raid, Ant, Roach, and Spider. Mm-mm, no, I'm no fun on a decon party. That's right, no. That ether, no. Not at all. Ah, you really didn't want to hear that sneeze. So here we are at 2 minutes before the hour. Still hoping to bring in, $200 this evening. So far, we're at zero. A couple of notes coming in. Gardner Guy says, some of them right-wing tea gaggers say, it's our turn to have one of them blah people in our White House. And this one will be a real Uncle Tom or else. I'm leaving that alone. And I won't make any references to the fronts of rice boxes. Okay, thanks for the bio of Moses Alexander, Kilo. Marty says, no, Bob, it's not that the children of Sandy Hook had it coming, it's that the children of Sandy Hook didn't exist. Remember, it was an Obama false flag operation.
False flag!
Get your conspiracy theory right and lay on a lot of snark. Oh, dude, Raid. Meanwhile, Sparky informing me, ShopVac works great on spiders, Bob. Yeah, but they're kind of loud and noisy when it comes to a radio broadcast. I'm sure Dynamite works pretty well, too. I probably know why she's in here. She's after my cricket. I like crickets. And I had one here in the studio a couple of nights ago, and just chirping its little heart out. Apparently the spider heard it. Spider, as long as Brother Bear in the backyard stays out, we'll be okay. This does not need to be the hillbilly version of Bear in the Big Bob House. Carol says, we will forgive the noise of a shop vac to keep you from impending death. Well, like I said, this isn't a funnel whip spoiler. Ferg and I were watching some Discovery Channel something or other years ago, and there was an account of someone being bitten by a funnel whip spider somewhere in the Sydney area, and he's still not okay. I think it will keep him away from Australia for the better part of the, well, for the remainder of his natural born days. Ah, okay, okay. The first U.S. state to elect a Jewish governor was Idaho. Moses Alexander was a foreign-born Hamburg, Germany, and a Democrat too, also described in the Idaho school history books of the 1930s as a member of the Hebrew race. Oh, Lord. Yeah. Oh, here it is, Thorn in the Side Thursday, as noted, the 8th day of October, 2015. And it's break time. Here endeth the filibobster. Oh, we're not done. We've even got, depending on if and we can get to it, we've got a follow-up to Christian Kayla Normandin. Oh, okay. It's been explained to me. Carol explains to me now. All spiders are out to kill you. I remember the first time I read The Lord of the Rings. I was a long time getting over the whole Shelob part. That may be the Eye of Mordor, the Ring Wraiths, the Morgul Blades. No, J.R.R. Tolkien tucks in a great big goddamn spider there. That's out to just suck the juices right out of Frodo and Sam, and you don't know. If you're like 10, 11 years old, and you know somebody who's 10, 11 years old reading Lord of the Rings for the first time, just tell them when they get to the Shelob's lair part, don't read that right before bed. Just don't. Mm-mm. Doesn't make for a blissful slumber. Not at all. So anyway, if you'd like to offer up something in the way of discussion, conversation, this is, after all, conversation radio. If you'd like to offer up something in the way of conversation here on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, if you've got something that that you want to bring to the table that maybe I haven't or won't, and you know the numbers, right? First of all, there's Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Easy, easy, easy. Sounds great. Then there's the phone number, one of the phone numbers, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. And finally, there is the stress line, named in memory of Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BOBKINCAID, @gmail.com. You can reach me on Facebook, Bob Kincaid, @BobKincaid on Twitter. Just kind of all over the place we are. Mm-hmm. So all of those are available to you. Green News Report on the way with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, this here being a Thursday. I always look forward to it. So, yeah, little musical interlude, little Green News Report, then we'll get right back at it. Light up the phones if you want. That's what they're there for. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Thursday, October 8, 2015.
Let's just, you know, get through this thing and whatever it costs, it costs.
Senator Graham wants federal aid for South Carolina flooding, but voted against it for Hurricane Sandy.
We, the trade ministers, are pleased to announce that we have successfully concluded the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Environmental groups slam the TPP agreement. New rules to protect farm workers from pesticides. Fracking companies wasting taxpayer money. Plus,
our economies, our livelihoods, and our food all depend on our oceans.
Two new marine sanctuaries for the U.S.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
You voted against that federal funding package during Hurricane Sandy.
I don't really remember that.
Really, Senator? You don't remember that?
I don't really recall that.
Are you sure?
No, we did check, and you did vote against that Hurricane Sandy relief package.
Look at it and tell you why.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, my mind is still blown by Senator Lindsey Graham and the amazing hypocrisy.
Yes, in the wake of historic rainfall and catastrophic flooding in South Carolina caused by Hurricane Joaquin, South Carolina's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, who is also running for president in 2016, took to the Senate floor to call for federal disaster relief funding.
As we get through this and look at the damages, now we will ask only that is what is responsible. We're not going to ask the federal government to do anything that's beyond the responsibility of the government.
Uh-huh.
But after Hurricane Sandy, Senator Graham joined with Republicans in opposing federal disaster funding for victims of that disaster. When confronted by that fact on CNN, Graham said he didn't remember.
So rather than putting a price tag on it, let's just, you know, get through this thing and whatever it costs, it costs.
Your critics are already saying you want federal funding to help the people of South Carolina, but correct me if I'm wrong, you voted against that federal funding package for the folks in New Jersey during Hurricane Sandy.
I'm all for helping the people in New Jersey. I don't really remember that me voting that
way. There was
way.
A big relief package, apparently. Yeah. You, a lot of other southern senators and representatives voted against.
Yeah, well, anyway, I don't really recall that.
Not ringing a bell.
Oh, well. Meanwhile, U.S. international trade negotiators say the U.S., Japan, and 10 Pacific Rim nations have reached a final agreement on the largest regional trade accord in history, the controversial Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. Negotiated in secret, the full text still has not been released, but core provisions received mixed reviews from environmental groups. The World Wildlife Fund praised new rules to stop illegal wildlife trafficking, but other environmental groups, like the Sierra Club, urged Congress to reject the pact, saying it gives corporations the right to sue a government to overturn environmental regulations that might impact future profits.
So corporations will have the right to sue governments because environmental regulations, they will say, are hurting their bottom line.
Yes, that's right. Even if it's far into the future, they can still sue.
Sounds like a great deal for Monsanto.
The Environmental Protection Agency has issued new rules to protect farm workers from pesticides on industrial farms. The first update to pesticide standards in 20 years. It includes the first ever ban on farm workers under 18 handling pesticides.
Speaking of Monsanto,
pesticide and herbicide use in the U.S. has soared with the introduction of genetically modified crops. Out of 2 million farm workers, the EPA estimates that 10 to 20,000 farm workers are poisoned by pesticides every year.
Thanks, Monsanto.
A new report charges that the drilling industry in the U.S. is wasting taxpayer money by flaring excess natural gas. Oil and gas companies burn off natural gas out in the field because it's too expensive to collect it for sale. The new report from Friends of the Earth calculates that more than $500 million worth of natural gas is wasted this way every year and calls on the Federal Bureau of Land Management to stop that flaring on public lands, saying taxpayers are losing more than $65 million worth of lost royalties.
That's those flames that are coming out of a pipe that you sometimes see when you drive by one of these fields?
That's right. Finally, some good news. President Obama has announced he's using his executive authority to create two new marine sanctuaries in the U.S. In a videotaped message to an International Oceans Conference, Obama stressed the importance of preserving the ocean.
Our economies, our livelihoods, and our food all depend on our oceans. and yet we know that our actions are changing them. And today I can announce we are taking steps to create two new marine sanctuaries, one in the tidal waters of Maryland and another in Lake Michigan.
New studies report that marine life has declined in the oceans 50% since 1970. Chile has also announced it will set aside the largest protected area in the Americas, as will New Zealand.
Obama's a tyrant. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Sixteen minutes past the hour. This is the Horn for Thorn in the Side, Thursday, the 8th day of October, 2015. And let's run right over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, John, haven't heard from you in quite some time.
Yeah, it's been signatures and what have you. So, how y'all doing? Blah, blah. Yeah, just call to touch base. And did you get a hold of the articles written about Ben Carson's interview with Kai Ryssdal today or yesterday?
No, I haven't seen that. Enlighten me.
Oh, it's tearing up as little as I know about social media, because he demonstrated an absolute ignorance about things like the debt ceiling. And Kai Ryssdal, like, four times tried to get him to answer the question about would you support the raising of debt ceiling to pay the debt? Because, that fight's getting ready to come up here in about a month or so.
Sure.
And he demonstrated, and I can't exactly repeat what he said, but he demonstrated utter and complete ignorance of what people with debt ceiling seemed like you'd say, act like you didn't know what the hell it was. And Ryssdal kept rephrasing the question.
Oh, he probably doesn't know what it is. The majority in the House of Representatives and the Senate have demonstrated time after time, John, that they don't know what it is.
Oh, they don't know what it is, or they don't like it anyway, so what the hell? But it's, these guys, they want to vote one of these, and there was a rather interesting set of discussions today, and possibly some articles, I don't remember exactly, but there was a serious discussion going on about the fact that we are like the premier country in the world, and yet we seem to be gung-ho to vote the most ignorant, stupid people into the most prestigious elective body in the world, who vote and make decisions that affect people's lives, not only just within their own states or the country, but they make decisions that affect the entire world, and yet they are the dumbest. And part of the thing that got that guy to step down from the speakership was, his... making comments about the Benghazi hearing was put in place in order to drive down Hillary's poll numbers. And they did another interview with this guy here last day or so that they just, my God, it sounded like the guy I'm trying not to be mean about it, but it sounds like the guy's got some brain damage or something, because he cannot put a sentence together without making it sound like he's on drugs or something.
He may very well be, too. I mean, take that into account. John, these people are freaks.
Yeah.
Idiots and freaks and deviants and... I've got audio here. Maybe we'll play it after the call. Of Shepard Smith interviewing... Representative Walter Jones from North Carolina, getting kind of snippy with him, because Walter Jones is the one who sent out the email saying, you know, we need to be free of moral turpentine.
Oh, well, it's not surprising at all. You know, they've got, you know, back about 20, 25 years ago, when I worked in D.C., there was a particular house that existed off of L Street, I think it was.
Yeah, but if you want the Republicans to be free of moral turpitude, that horse is out of the barn, over the hill, across the river, and halfway across the continent.
Yeah, but like I said, back in my day, they had a house on Hill Street that was specifically put up. It was almost like a safe place, I guess you'd call it, where they could go and let their hair down, such as the hair they have. And, you know, these people, they get this sense of privilege of very, I'm a congressman, or I'm a senator, I'm special. And, you know, they hope to become one of the 1% one day, and many of them actually do become members of the 1%. And they think the world doesn't, you know, they vote like this whole, you know, everybody's been saying, well, the TPP is, you know, they're going to fight back on that. No, they're not. They're just greasing the wheels for it. And, you know, it's gotten ugly. And, you know, Republicans are eating themselves up. They're actually, you know, this whole, you mentioned one time about it was almost like a civil war going on between the Republican Party. Another example, this is another skirmish. Republicans are eating their own freaking lunch, which is good if you like them losing, but it's a damn thing when you've got the politics of our nation being jammed up. If they get into a real big knockdown, drag-out fight over the speakership, Congress ain't going to be able to get a damn thing done. Not that they do much anyway, but, you know, how do we look at the rest of the world when we can't even freaking get our, you know, our second highest, you know, guy that's second in line for the presidency, if something happened to Obama or whomever, and we can't even get the guy, they can't even choose who the hell they're going to get. Anyhow, thought I'd just bring that little story up to you.
Well, I appreciate it. Look, I mean, I'm running out of things to say about some of these clowns running for the Republican nomination. And it's really, see, I'm not lying. For me, yeah, they're clowns. They're jackasses. They are miscreants. There's all kinds of fun words. But it's the people who don't have enough sense to look at them and go, well, these people are idiots. I mean, you know, we probably spoil ourselves here in the Horn Family Commune congregation because we have a little bit greater understanding of the workings of constitutional governance than most folks do, right? But still, if you listen to Mumbling Ben Carson and you think, oh, that guy's on the ball, well, it's not just that there's something wrong with Ben Carson, there's something wrong with you. And it's not like, you know, you're morally compromised. Some of them may be, that moral turpentine, whatever. But it displays, it's like the woman last night, Christian Kayla Normandin. There is something essentially missing in her intellectual development.
Yeah.
I mean, she thinks she's sounding smart when she says basically.
You get the point that, you know, as much as you make fun of these people, you stop and think about it for a minute. Just like this McCarthy guy. He sounds, and maybe, like I said, maybe we're being told in me, and maybe he does actually have maybe a verbal dyslexia or something going on, whatever. And it's just not publicly known. So we'll give him a point. But this guy and Gohmert and the now more, I guess either gone now or close to being gone, but Bachman. These people, as much as you might point fingers at them, they got elected. And so you eventually have to go back to the basic statement. Who the hell votes these people into office?
And there you go. I mean, go to the first district of Texas and just start knocking on doors and looking at people.
Yeah.
These are the people who send Louis Asparagus Gohmert to Congress and think that he's the best they have.
Yeah, I don't know if it was your show or somebody else made the comment that somebody actually went down and, like, for some reason had to go into this district to do some business or something, and he kept talking to some people down there, and he walked away with the idea that Gohmert was the smartest guy that they had. You know, it's like, wow, you know, Jesus, you know, you've got, and, you know, a significant minority of the Republican Party is run by these troglodytes, which is what I call them. I mean, they're backwards. You call them knuckle draggers. I mean, you know, I think giving knuckle draggers a bad name, but it's like, damn. I mean, these people are in control of trillions of dollars in money. Multi-million man armies, military, nuclear weapons, all nine yards, directly or indirectly, and they cannot think their way out of a wet paper bag and have to have cue cards just to answer a question. And it just brings chills to the back of your neck. You know, thank the gods that these fucking, well, excuse the language, these guys were not charged back in the Cuban Missile Crisis and stuff that's going on, because hell, we'd be all glowing in the dark and wouldn't need night lights. Well, anywho, I'll turn you loose and let you go boogie off to the next one. We shall talk to you again.
All right, John, you be good. Good hearing from you.
No, hey, it's just been a busy period of time moving the stuff that people want to buy and the stuff they don't want to buy. So it's all good.
All right, good deal. Stay safe. Shiny side up, dirty side down. Our buddy John calling from out on the road. Just had a question in the chat room from Bike Gata. Asking in particular, why do we call him Louis Asparagus Gohmert? I can't go and find the clip, but it's from that testy exchange between him and Eric Holder in a hearing sometime last year. It was last year, wasn't it? Where Gohmert, in a state of extreme pique, said, "Don't cast aspersions on my asparagus." So that, yeah. Oh, hey, look, it's Jim in Nevada Stan. Hey, Jim, what's happening?
What's up, Bob?
I don't know it. How about you?
Well, you got to love that brain surgeon slash SWAT team member, Dr. Ben. that's incredible, man. It's just miraculous that he... but he's in second place, right?
Yes, yes, right there, neck and neck. What a moral pillar he is, telling the guy with the gun in his ribs, no, you don't want me. Point your gun at the 19-year-old making minimum wage across the counter there.
Well, in a, what do you call it, in a Calvinistic point of view, he's definitely right, you know. You know, he's got stuff to live for, this kid doesn't, you know, at least not yet. And you know, God put him there for a certain reason, to take a bullet for Dr. Ben, right?
Right, and then Dr. Ben could apply his... Hang on. World famous neurosurgeon skills to saving his life. Only he wouldn't do that because the kid probably didn't have health care.
Oh, yeah. You don't think he does like a little free brain surgery for the needy on the side?
Yeah, only if somebody's precious conjoined twins of the earth is picking up the tab.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's pretty weird. Do you think there's a chance that the TPP might not pass because of the Republicans might kind of override it and some Democrats might catch a clue? I mean, doesn't the Senate have to still vote on it?
I think people will oppose it, but in a way, there's a parallel, Jim, between the TPP and the Iran agreement. Neither of which I don't think the Congress may pitch a fit, but they may not succeed in stopping it. And the reason I say there's a comparison with the Iran deal. Looks like a treaty, you know, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, but the Senate can throw all, there's no advising consent there.
Yeah.
I got Brad and Desi referenced this just a couple of minutes ago, but apparently 350.org, because the TPP will reduce or eliminate tariffs between Australia, Brunei, Darussalam, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and the United States and Vietnam. But it also means that climate change is going to be harder to deal with. Karthik Ganapathy of 350.org said it's still the same disaster for climate change it was 3 months ago. Because, among other things, the TPP protects fossil fuel producers.
Yeah, well, of course, the oil companies, you know, the Koch brothers had to get that in. I just wonder if, like, all of a sudden there was, like, no more oil. You know what I mean? They seem to have solar developing pretty good. And when there would be a way for us to switch over that almost immediately, if it was like a Rooseveltian wartime emergency, which basically it is, I think, for the planet, for, you know, us little human beings inhabiting it. But, you know, I don't think much the Congress and the Senate sees it, you know. I mean, I think only Bernie, you know, it's my man, I got his shirt on. She's the only one. I mean, Hillary's coming around, but I don't trust her as far as I can throw her. You know, I know she was on Saturday Night Live, and I didn't see it. I caught it on Twitter. That wasn't bad, but, I mean, she's had 20 or 30 years of public speaking and threw out some lines. That's, you know, it's not that hard, you know. Once you get over the fear of public speaking, it's not that big a deal. You know, that's one of the things I learned from my couple of years of stand-up comedy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, consider it with the TPP, among other things, the hydrocarbon industry will be able to sue countries that try to enact climate change legislation. Over at 350.org, Karthik Ganapathy continued and said, "The White House seems intent on telling everyone environmentalists like this deal, but the truth is, by handing even more power to big oil, letting massive corporations throw tantrum lawsuits at governments who dare to scale back emissions, and prolonging our reliance on fracked gas, there's no question that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is an absolute disaster for the climate."
Yeah.
I mean, you've read Naomi Klein, right? You know who she is. Well,
yeah, Big Benners.
Yeah, she said that this will be a disaster. She said she actually described TPP, saying on Twitter, "This is pathetic, a betrayal." For real, folks, memories of how Big Green helped push through NAFTA. And so yet, the White House keeps, oh, this is going to be great for the environment. Sure it will.
Do you think they had something on Obama, or they said, well...
No, I think he wants this. I mean, he's a center-right Democrat, okay? He just
right.
is.
He's Republican-right, basically, yeah. Yeah. I mean, just like Hillary, basically, is Republican-right. I mean, yeah, I'm going to have to start campaigning a lot more for Bernie or something. You think?
I'm seeing something. There's a little bit of smoke being generated over a piece that former House member Barney Frank wrote for Politico, in which he said progressives should not support Bernie Sanders because Bernie Sanders can never be elected. And of course, the article, he doesn't identify himself as a longtime Clinton partisan. He offers it up as just sage advice from a wise old Politico observing from the sidelines. But the fact of the matter is, you know, the Barney Frank's been in the tank for Hillary Clinton and Bill for a very, very long time. They're friends.
Yeah.
And the more you see of this stuff, the more you know that the Clinton camp, which thought that they were going to have a coronation where they wouldn't have to spend any money, are now kind of worried. They're a lot worried because they're going to have to actually run a campaign. And the thing is, and I'm not being mean, and I'm not name calling or anything. And I reiterate, if she is the Democratic Party nominee, I will vote for her. But I'm going to work to try to make sure that Bernie is the Democratic nominee. But the fact of the matter is, I think her supporters worry because they remember how she self-destructed in 2008. She imploded.
Yeah.
And she doesn't look particularly impressive out there. I mean, everything that Bernie says he's for, she takes a month, 2 months, and then she's for it too.
Yeah, well, even her, like I said, I didn't see it live. I saw it on Twitter, and it was all right. It wasn't that great. Everybody's going all, or not every, but it seemed like the media was going all orgasmic over how great she did. And I'm sorry, you've been in public life for 30 years. You should be able to go on stage and throw out a couple of lines. You know, that basically, I'm sure that was written for it, wasn't improv. So, you know, then once you get over the fear, the stage, quote unquote, stage fright, you know, you're in like Flynn. So, I don't think the big SNL, and it would be great if they would have Bernie on in a couple of weeks, you know, but we'll see. Well, I don't know. Do you think that'd be his forte? SNL.
I honestly can't see Bernie on SNL.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things, and I read another thing today where another supposedly in the know kind of person was remarking on how abrasive Bernie is. You know what? It could be that with this, I mean, because remember, despite the fact that the Inside the Beltway for-profit media said, you know, if that one in the White House would just bow and scrape a little more to the Republicans, they might finally like him. When the only thing that would have made them happy would be if he had committed suicide. And in point of fact, Barack Obama did bow and scrape, and he tried to get along, and he went playing golf with John Boehner and all of that silly crap. And they still, you know, and every time he extended the olive leaf, he drew back a bloody stump. Maybe, just maybe, We need somebody that doesn't want to get along with these pricks. Maybe we need somebody that'll punch them in the nose and then say, you want some more?
I think you're 100% right. I mean, this go along to get along crap, I mean, that doesn't seem to work. And I don't know. I'm kind of hoping for some sort of.
I'm tired of this whole thing that's been going on for a generation now, or it seems like a generation, of we judge our politicians by whether or not we would like to have a beer with them.
Oh, God, I hate it. When that question rang out, what was that, 2000? I thought it was the stupidest fucking thing, pardon my French. And no, I wouldn't want to have a beer with George Bush. Junior.
Well, I like beer. You like beer, but it's not how is that a political standard?
Yeah, and then
from where I stand, the presidency of the United States of America is a shitty job. It's a lousy job. And there's probably something wrong with anybody who wants to be president.
Yeah.
Because your life is not your own. And, you know, after you're done being president, your life's not your own. It's like Elvis. It's like Michael Jackson. Who would want to be that famous? Who would want to not be able to go down and get a, you know, and get a burger somewhere without being mobbed?
I don't know. I wouldn't mind being Mick Jagger. Okay.
Yeah, Mick seems to handle it fairly well.
Yeah, he still. I remember my dad telling me when I was about 13, and I saw that he was on the UHF channel. There was only one TV that could get in the house, and it was up in my mom and dad's room. I said, Mom, I want to watch Dick Cavett tonight. Someone want to say, so she said, yes, sir. My dad was out somewhere doing something, whatever. And then my dad came home. And first they had Bobby Fish, and then there was the Mick Jagger part where it said, now it's on Twitter or internet or YouTube, whatever, where it's Dick Cavett talking to Mick Jagger behind, you know, backstage. And I just remember my dad saying, and this is, I guess, 72, 73. And my dad said, well, he'll be dead before it's 30. And, well, Mick's still around. He just turned 72. I saw that on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. And from what I understand, he's quite a health freak, and how the hell Keith Richards is still alive. Man, I don't know. Makes you not want to quit smoking.
Keith attributes it to only getting the best heroin.
Yeah, legal drugs. I love that. That cracked me up when I saw that or read that or heard that somewhere. I'm like, kind of makes sense. Because it seems like you screw up when you start messing with the pharmaceutical industrial complex and you start taking their pills. You know, it's just like when you see those goddamn freaking commercials, which seem to run on infinitum about, they cause it, you know, teach you about 15 seconds of how great it is, and that's to sleep like a dream. And you get 45 seconds of all the bad crap. So, all right, well, I'm going to let you go. Let somebody else get through.
All right, Jim, you take care. We'll talk soon.
All right,
later.
Take it easy.
Bye now. 15 minutes before the hour, about an hour and 15 minutes left in the program. See how that works? And you see how easy conversation radio is? If you've never called the program, you know you're welcome to, and you need not be afraid. We welcome everybody here, and we have some lovely conversations. And, gosh, we don't have any real toasters to give away for first-time callers or anything like that, but know that you'll be welcome. You can bring just about anything you want to the table. 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. That's one number, the other being 304-574-8178. And, of course, Skype to Skype from anywhere on planet Earth, Bob Kincaid Horn. Okay? I got to catch up with this one simply because it's metastasizing. The right wing's Islamophobia campaign has borne fruit. Let's put it that way. Last night, of course, we had the long, painfully drawn out exposition of ignorance from Christian Kayla Normandin of Florida. Well, don't get too smug, Californians. It's your turn. Tara Kelly, who is apparently a mom from Bakersfield, got real upset at her son's study sheet entitled Section 3, Islamic Beliefs and Practices. She scrawled on the homework assignment, "My son will not be a part of this in any..." And you know what? I don't care if it is California. I get to do the dumbass cornpone hillbilly accent. "My son will not be a part of this in any sort of way. This is bad teaching material. He will not partake. If you have a problem with it, call our lawyer, Ephesians 6:10. Isaiah 40:31, Mark 12:30, 2 Corinthians 19:12, 9-10, Psalm 46:1, and Psalm 22:19. Now, that's a law firm of which I've never heard. Call our lawyer, Ephesians 6:10. And it's not just that they're weird-ass Islamophobes. They are weird-ass Islamophobes who are afraid, who are proud of their fear. So they run to Facebook to post it, which is where Tara Kelly, you know, put this up. And, of course, the local live-action news team coverage, KGET, picked right up on it. One of the things that pissed her off was that there was one of those square codes you can scan so that you could hear, a young student there could hear the call to prayer from the Blue Mosque in Istanbul, to wit, granted, to me, that sounds like bad, a cross between bad off-key yodeling and a cat killing, but we know I'm not particularly fond of organized religion generally, but I don't think this is me we're talking about. I don't feel suddenly compelled to get all Islam just because I heard the call to prayer. I mean, me personally, I think if you have to be called to prayer, what? Does God only listen five times a day? If you have to be called to prayer, then maybe, never mind. But, so Mama, you know, that incensed Mama. My son, this is bad teaching material. He will not partake. And she underlined, and she wrote not, all in caps, and she underlined it three times. Because, you know, hatred, it's what's for dinner. Yeah. Now, here's the good part. So Tara Calley put this up about her son will not partake, and she got a lot of pushback on Facebook. That was nice. That's encouraging. One remark said, "I see nothing wrong with the assignment. If you disagree with it as a parent, that's your right. However, you could have handled this in a little more mature manner rather than throwing your son in the middle of this battle. Instead, you've helped teach your son intolerance because you don't believe in a religion that he is learning about in school. You've written scriptures from your own all over it about why these people are wrong and you're right. That is a true shame." Another individual, who appears to be quite intelligent, said, "The assignment with an excerpt from the Quran is using the excerpt as a piece of literature for analysis, not to proselytize your child." Ooh, and then this was right across the bow. "The only thing being forced upon your kid is ignorance and intolerance by you, the parent, because apparently Christianity is the only belief system a young human being should be allowed to be educated on. All you're doing is breeding another member of society with an irrational fear of people who aren't Christian, and therefore embedding the future workings of hatred into your child's brain." A teacher chimed in. "I'm a teacher and completely agree that this should be taught as part of world history curriculum. And that QR code is an awesome interactive idea. I actually love this assignment. From a personal and religious standpoint, however, I think learning about the foundation of other religions is the best thing for young Christian students. Why should we support ignorance? Nowhere on this worksheet does it say why is Islam the best religion. World religions was one of my favorite classes at the private Christian college I attended." I'm just curious, Ephesians 6:10. That's her lawyer, you know. We will, of course, take it from the KJV, as Elizabethan English is the language that God speaks. No wonder they have to pray five times a day in Islam. He don't speak Arabic. "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might." She left out the part about, "Put on the whole armor of God that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." Wile E. Coyote, super genius. And it goes on, oh yeah, I recognize this now. "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world." Amen. Glory. Hallelujah. "Against spiritual wickedness in high places." But you just kind of know that Tara Calley didn't have that right to hand. Somebody's putting this crap out there for her. Let's see, Mark 12:30. and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. So this dumbass is actually proselytizing at the teacher in a note objecting to something she perceives as proselytization. 2 Corinthians 12, 9 and 10, fine Corinthian leather. Oh, I typed it backwards. Dang it. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Then, okay, if she takes that verse to heart, then why didn't she just shut the up and let her kid do the homework? We're going to see more of this, I'm afraid. Oh, thanks going out to Bob in Texas. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very kindly. Bob knocked down fundraising for the evening. And if you want it, Bob, there'll be a poster on the way to you. Just let me know. A little note coming from Ray down in Florida. Keith gave up narcotics, Keith Richards, in the 80s. According to Mick, he replaced heroin with Jack Daniels, but he takes very good care of himself. Long may he live. By the way, if you haven't seen it, the Keith Richards documentary on Netflix is really, really good. It's well worth the time. Ron and Raleigh says, all I have to say is Allah Akbar, y'all. Mm-hmm. Wait, does that mean we're all Muslim now? Dang. Oh, they're sneaky that way. And thank you, Roger. Roger in Oregon. I wondered about this. The casting asparagus is actually a Three Stooges reference from the 1944 film Busy Buddies. It was Curly's line, are you casting asparagus on my cooking? That's not exactly, but casting aspersions on my asparagus. I'd hate to think that Louis Gohmert actually had a working knowledge of the Stooges. Ooh, you know, that's just too cultural for Louis. Oh, my goodness gracious. Let's go and talk to the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansas, Stan. Hey, Diane. Wait a minute. Yeah. Oh, Diane. I've got your pot.
Hello?
There you are.
Hi, Bob. I'm a little disoriented. I thought you were still talking about asparagus.
Well, I was, kind of.
Oh, I'm so glad to know.
Yeah, I was, no, our buddy Roger out in Oregon pointed out that apparently it's a Three Stooges reference.
I'm so glad to know that. I mean, I've wondered about that because what a wacko comment in the middle of public policy, and I was just wondering if it came out of thin air, beamed down from Mars. I mean, I have wondered about that. So there's actually a reference point that's explainable, kind of.
Isn't it sad that we actually do find relief in that, Diane?
I am so relieved. Because it was random. It was, I mean, he could have said grapefruit. I don't know. I didn't see the logic of it. I didn't know the reference. But, well, Three Stooges, yeah, goddess of irony. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, Three Stooges remark.
Well, and the sad thing is, Louis Gohmert couldn't win a debate against Larry, Moe, or Curly. Or probably even the very unfunny Curly Joe.
It's bad. It's bad. The public discourse is bad, except I have an exception to that, something that happened at Kansas State this week.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. But first, I'd just briefly like to tell you something else about Kansas State before I forget. You know that thing our marching band did, which, well, I
how could
know.
I forget?
Yeah. I don't know if the listeners remember, but could maybe you could give a synopsis of it, and then I could give an update. I mean,
well, the Kansas State marching band took a swipe at the University of Kansas. Their band formed a big Jayhawk on the field. And then what was supposed to be the Starship Enterprise came up and, well, attacked it. Only some people saw the Starship Enterprise as looking a little less like the Starship Enterprise and a little more like a piece of the male anatomy.
Yeah, I never really saw that, but that, yeah.
That's because you don't have a dirty mind, Diane.
Oh, no, I it's not that. I just didn't see it. I really, I can't claim not to have a dirty mind. I mean, I could see... I think I'm pretty normal that way in being able to see something off color, but I heard, and I don't know how to confirm this, but I heard that it was and I heard this from someone in my graduate class who's in athletics, in the athletics department, and he said that the kids made a mistake, and when you turn the wrong way, weird things happen with the shape. We're talking about this in an ethics class.
Well, at least those education dollars are well spent.
Ah, but anyway, what I wanted to report about that, and you remember they did it when they were playing, South Dakota?
Yeah, well, I was trying to remember. It was South Dakota. Yeah. See, you remember more about this than you like to admit.
Yeah, well, I cannot be relied upon to remember stuff about sports, but since this was in the news so much, and we've discussed it in my graduate class, and the reason I remember it is, and this is what I want to report, because this is in the public domain, a game later, or maybe two games later, but no more than that, that marching band was awarded a big deal award on the field.
Well, they're probably a pretty good marching band.
Well, on the heels of the director having to sit out, on the heels of the president's office having to pay a fine to the conference, I mean, in light of this press information, the press coverage, that was the last thing I thought I'd see next, that the marching band was getting. It's a named award, and it's I guess it's pretty prestigious. I don't even recall the name. But it... We get a press release, an email update every day about news at Kansas State. It goes out to the whole Kansas State community, and I saw it announced there. So I just thought, well, that's the last thing I thought I'd see after what seems to be a great embarrassment, would seem to elicit an apology and a fine, but they're getting this big award. So now I don't know how to think about any of it.
Well, I wouldn't lose any sleep.
No, I don't.
I think the original response was sort of over the top.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
the thing is that I don't know. I mean, it's reminiscent of a larger. A larger thing in our culture. You know, once upon a time in, say, professional football, professional basketball, professional baseball, basketball, football, yeah, we had these people who were called characters.
Mm.
And they, you know, Yogi Berra, who passed away, was a character. And he was apparently a deeply decent human being who was broadly parodied for his appearance and for his yogi-isms. My favorite being when he became a spokesman for Yoo-hoo chocolate beverage, and the one woman asked him, is Yoo-hoo hyphenated? And he said, no, ma'am, it's not even carbonated.
That's good.
You know, that's a wit there. You know,
that's
not dumb. That's really sharp.
That makes him lovable. Yeah, yeah.
But we had characters, as they were called, and now because there is so much money involved, and this applies at the level of big time college marching bands, professional athletics, college athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, really, in all walks of life where there's a lot of money on the line, the character is no longer welcome.
Yeah. Much to pity, huh?
And what I mean by that, in years, I mean, okay, this is actually kind of an interesting example. I was a member of a social fraternity in college. And there's a fundraising, an alumni fundraising dinner every year that is called the Frank Norris Pig Dinner. And Frank Norris was one of the early 20th century's most promising young muckrakers.
Oh, uh-huh.
He wrote some pretty stirring stuff of the era. Unfortunately, displayed not atypical of the era, a nasty anti-Semitic streak.
Mm.
But, you know, exposing corporate corruption, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they had the alumni dinner is called the Frank Norris Pig Dinner.
Pig?
Pig.
P-I-G?
P-I-G.
Hmm.
And it all stems back to a time when the fraternity chapter at the University of California, Berkeley, stole a pig from another fraternity and roasted it.
Oh.
And of course, in 2015, were that to happen, there would be ripples of tidal waves of outrage all across the interweb tubes, and probably congressional hearings.
And PETA might be involved.
Probably. Whereas back then, you know, it was a harmless prank.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that theft of farm animals is funny.
Oh no!
Consider the Army Navy rivalry. The Navy's mascot is a goat.
Hmm.
And the cadets from Army would on the eve of the game, the cadets from Army were almost honor bound to try to steal Navy's goat. Sometimes they got away with it, sometimes they didn't. And none of this, again, I credit it, Diane, to the fact that there is so much money at stake.
Oh, yeah, proper signaling and framing of the message. Well, Bob, the first thing I thought of when I saw this award announced for the marching band, you know, right on the heels of what seemed to be a scandal, I thought, oh, so they're apologizing, but this is the signal to say, not really. That's what I thought. I have no proof of that. But, I mean, it was announced with great fanfare about there was a big article on the marching band getting the award, and it was, I kid you not, it was the next game. You know, it was right away. And I thought, oh, well, this is signaling. I mean, maybe it was going to happen anyway, and it doesn't really matter to me. I mean, these kids, the marching band people, I run into them after class because they cut across the quad on their way to the old stadium to practice, and so they're really sweethearts, and you know I wish them well and all that. But my cynical side thought, well, this is a signal from the college's public affairs office about, you know, we stand behind them, and we're for them. And
well, y'all are all Wildcats, and that was a joke at the Jayhawks' expense. I mean,
Wildcats. And, you know, you mentioned, and talking about animals, there was we also got a message in that email newsletter about the fact that someone came on campus and shot one of the cows that we have. Well, I don't know much about this, but, you know, we have all sorts of vet stuff here and breeding stuff at some corner.
You've got an ag school.
Yeah. I mean, and like one of my former students in my MBA class used to, the burly guy used to come in class with his big boots on and, you know, he's kind of tough looking. And one time he came in on crutches. And I said, "What's wrong?" He goes, "Well, I was drunk and rolled my pickup." And, you know, I thought, "Oh my God." I mean, this is not my typical MBA student, but doesn't matter. I mean, then I really got to talking with him, and he breeds a certain, I ran into him in the drugstore, and I asked him, "How are you doing?" And then he told me he breeds these cows, and it's special, and he called them his babies. He says, "No one's going to hurt my babies." And I thought, you know, whatever I thought this guy was about, I'm in the moment.
Oh, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. I went to college out in Missouri with a guy. He was like a senior when I was a sophomore. And he had come to Westminster College for the sole purpose of getting a history degree because he wanted to be an educated corn farmer. He was from Illinois. And he would tell stories about being out in the middle of the South 400 acres on the John Deere, just toddling along, doing whatever you do in the tractor with his ABBA cassette in the cassette deck of the air-conditioned cab of his John Deere tractor, and periodically getting down from the tractor and munching on a couple of morning glory seeds and just driving along that great, flat, rich earth, just tripping his little mind out, thinking about Winston Churchill.
Interesting. Well, before we lost our 70,000-watt radio station, historic radio station, and I won't go into the story because it's just not enough time and it's kind of complex, but we lost it because of the greediness of the athletics department here. We had a time-sharing agreement with a radio station in Topeka, and they messed with it. And so 70,000 watts! It just, the court ruled against Kansas State, and it was long-standing, historic blowtorch, and, you know, because of extension of land grant, I mean, you know, the farmers would get, you know, they would get news about the latest seeds while they're riding on their tractors and, you know, listening to our radio station. And one time I ran into some farmer, I don't remember where, but I had done a 3-part interview on that radio station about Enron. He goes, "Oh, I heard your interview. I was on my tractor with my headsets on. I heard you interviewing about Enron." You know, I thought, I just had to stop and assess where I am, you know? Like, I didn't know that.
But it isn't that, isn't that a beautiful thing?
You get a
sense for some of what I get here. I get to, you know, I got that magnificent little note from Margaret out somewhere in the sandbox in the Middle East, and she said, you know, we just love listening to Dr. Bill and the Horn over here, and the notes that I got a few photos from our pal Chris in Germany of the Volksfest, where people wear silly hats and drink lots of beer. And the notes that I get from Dennis in Kentucky saying we mowed the lawn again today.
Yeah. Well.
And you yourself, or Asa, who Brother Deacon Asa, who wrote in to say I'm listening to the horn somewhere over Mexico at 35,000 feet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm headed for New York, like, you know, tomorrow, and I'll be, you know, unless I'm just all booked up around, I guess it'd be on at 6 o'clock there, you know, I'll be listening. But I mean, the reason I mentioned that thing is I could not believe we fumbled and lost a 70,000-watt historic radio station, but, you know, because of the farmers we serve and the people who it went to, and it was in Nebraska. It was 70,000 watts, and a lot of farmers and ranchers and all were listening in about the latest research pertaining to their loss.
And you're telling me they screwed that up? They lost.
Yeah, they screwed it up. My friend, who used to be a reporter for the Pika Journal, he wrote a series of articles about it, so I know more about that than I even want to. But there was a time-sharing agreement about this stupid football game, and once Kansas State got really big in football, you know, that time-sharing agreement that they had with WIBW in Topeka became kind of a thorn in the side of our athletic department. They wanted more money for it, or they wanted to fool with that contract. And so I can't really talk about it a lot because some of the details have faded from my mind, but they screwed around with the contract because in their mind, football was now worth more at Kansas State. And if anyone was going to broadcast it in a time-sharing agreement, they wanted more. But there was a contract, and the judge ruled K-State had broke the contract. And so we lost our 70,000-watt blowtorch.
That's almost unforgivable.
Radio station because of athletics, and that's why that's just another reason I don't really like sports, you know? And it goes to your point about the money involved. I mean, anyway, it's water under the bridge. It's done. It's been that way for years. And I knew the
So is that, so radio. Wait. So is there a campus station at
well,
K-State?
Well, that's what I was about to say, because I know the producer there, and I did at the time anyway, because I did those interviews. I mean, that's the first time someone put me in a studio with a mic in front of my face and interviewed me on the radio. I mean, and then after that, I did do TV and radio and print. It kind of started that.
Well, if you will pardon my saying so, I think that was a day whose time had come, Diane, because it's not like you're going to be a dull interview.
Well, I didn't know what kind of an interviewer I would be, but to my surprise, when they took me in the studio and they said, "Are you nervous?" I'm like, I'm not sure. Then they put the mic in front of my face and asked me questions, and it's like, oh, I've been doing this for a long time. You know, I was in heaven, actually.
Yeah, you were an old hand. You were an overnight old hand.
I didn't know it. And then in Pittsburgh, they did that on Clear. They put me in a studio at Clear Channel in Pittsburgh and the same thing. And then that KDTA, that one, remember that old radio station in Pittsburgh?
Oh, yeah.
I did that with the, anyway.
You mean KDKA?
Yeah, the old one. Yeah, the one you talked about. It's historic, you know. It's, well, historic in fact.
KDKA signs off another broadcast day, good night, and go to hell?
Well, I thought you said it was special because it was one of the few radio stations of its time in that area, or...
Oh, it was. It was the first, yeah. I think. I think it was the first, and one of the, it's not the only one, but one of the rare ones east of the Mississippi whose call sign begins with a K.
That's what you said about it. Anyway, I don't need to go into that. It started something. Well, not only that, I was telling my students this. It's a brief story. But remember when WorldCom, there was this other thing that happened. WorldCom on a Tuesday morning announced a $3.8 billion write-off and the market went into free fall.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, for some reason, you know, I had been at my folks' house in Kansas City, Overland Park, and my sister was there, and she does investment analysis and stuff like that. And she said to me, you know, it was Enron. She was watching the Enron-like antics. She said to me, I can't tell my clients if I know the information I'm looking at is real. And I just stopped dead in my tracks, and all these cases I taught all over the years just flooded into my mind, and it's like, it just clicked. I got to get out of the market tomorrow. And that was Sunday. Monday morning, I called the person who handles my teacher retirement fund. And, well, he's in the Bahamas, you know, can't be reached. And I'm like, give me an 800 number. He brokers with someone, give it to me. And, you know, some cajoling. So I got this 800 number, and I got this guy on the phone from God knows what office, and I said, I want out of the market by the time the bell rings tonight. Well, blah, 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 and it's a little late. I said, I'm a client.
I am giving you instruction. This stuff belongs to me.
Yeah, and I want it out by the time the bell rings tonight. And he did it. He did it. And the next morning, the market went into free fall because WorldCom was writing off $3.8 billion, and later they wrote off another $3.8 billion. Anyway, so that was like in June, and I happened to be in my office at the university, which I never am in the summer. I make it a point. I work in the summer, but not in my home office. You know, I don't go in, but I happened to be in. And this kid from the media department called and said, Dr. Swanson, we wondered if you would interview about this breaking news about the corporate scandals and WorldCom in particular. So I did. I did. I did my first press release with, you know, and then later it was just like they called me all the time. I did my first press release on this because it's what I teach, you know, corporate scandals and you know, business responsibility to society and social contract, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so he writes up a press release. I approve it, but I guess I approve what went out because I told him, and he did nothing wrong. I told him as an aside, I said, you know, as a matter of fact, I can't say that I knew this was going to happen, but I had a permission, and I got out of the market by 5 o'clock the day before. You know what? That press release went all over the world. I kid you not, Asia Times.
Well, see, this is, let me just point something out in medias res, Diane. If you had the larcenous spirit of a right winger, you could probably be making a fortune off of credulous Emery's and Eileen's out there.
Oh no,
Marvelines.
No. I really didn't like that. I mean, there. You know how editors pick. I mean, for some reason, they got that press release out way ahead of what other news offices were doing. I mean, who picked it up? APA. What was that other? Anyway, it doesn't matter. It went all over. But you know, because Kansas State was out ahead of the story with a professor, you know, commenting on something, very timely. But a couple, you know how editors can choose the headlines? It's like, professor has premonition of market decline.
Right. And
oh, shit! No!
Hey, you were one step away from replacing Gene Dixon in the National Enquirer.
Or getting the insider trading, getting the Security Exchange Commission calling. What did you know and how did you know it? But it only was in a couple of headlines at some. I mean, the rest of the people went with the real story was not about me. I had just said that to this student reporter as an aside. But it was buried at the end of the story, and when I proofed it, I didn't really think it was too odd, you know, just a little human interest component at the end of the story, but a couple of newspapers picked it up like that, and I was like, oh, no, but anyway, but it was fun. I mean, no problem. It was, I can't tell you how many papers, and then it spun off into all these. You know, it was really a good thing for me, actually, because I do like to do that kind of thing. I just thought it was strange how it happened, you know, that I was determined to get out of the market just on something my sister said and my mind clicking like, yeah, this isn't going to work for me, and I'm out of this. Anyway.
Well, let me ask you, one of the stories... And you know, I don't want to tread on any ethical anythings, but one of the stories that I read doing prep this evening was to the effect that Wall Street is getting more than a little bit nervous over the chaos in the House.
Oh, good. Oh, good. You know, because they, I mean, I think I'm for that, because I've been trying to think who can rein these guys in. I don't think Wall Street can afford to have these lunatics in there, you know?
Well, but the way I read it was that they've been okay with the lunacy heretofore, but mm-hmm. the idea of some sort of civil war, pardon the reference, inside mm-hmm. the Republican Party is making them nervous. And I mean, what I took from that is that whatever squabbling's been going on, that Wall Street knew that it could depend on the always still depend on the Republican Party to do its bidding. But the 40 or so real, live, honest to goodness, you know, whoops, get them, you know, kind of weirdos, the Freedom Coalition, they call themselves. These are the people who are leading the problem. And of course, the Democrats, I think, are just sitting back going, your baby, you bathe it.
Well, I'd be kind of interested to see Wall Street get in on this, because it would just cause some headaches within the party, because there's at least two or three schisms in that party that could burst if just the right pressure was involved. And Wall Street is one. I mean, how far do you think Wall Street really wants to go with this religious crap, you know?
Oh, Wall Street, you know what I mean? Wall Street couldn't care less.
Well,
as long as it gets the rubes to do what Wall Street wants, they would, you know, they'd be, you know, they'd acquiesce in a campaign to boil Muslims in oil. As long as they kept what they had.
Yeah, but
now who scares Wall Street is Bernie.
Yeah, Bernie scares Wall Street, but there's got to be some point, like when this, like my mind runs free on this, like. People want to pray in the business setting, and I mean, I don't know if corporations want that stuff.
I mean, was the Hobby Lobby decision good for Wall Street, Diane?
Well, but it wasn't. It didn't have to do with their internal affairs. I'm talking about something where someone like this Kim Davis type, you know, wants a chapel in I don't know, United Airlines or Apple, or and then you know, public policy gets involved and the court system gets involved. I mean, I imagine there's some point where the business sector would go, get this stuff out of here. So
we're in the money business, not the religion business.
I mean,
please.
Because, you know, these people don't know. I mean, this may sound extreme to you, but, you know, we know those people don't know where to stop. So they're not going to see the corporate door as a boundary for, I mean, conceivably, they won't see the corporate door as a boundary for what they want. They could conceivably want to take it into corporate life, into the boardroom, which actually they already have done a bit. And that's not, and then you get stuff like, shareholders unhappy, fund managers unhappy. I mean, I can see a certain scenario where this is not going to work out well for corporate boardrooms, because they can't win. They're going to have some of their consumers pissed at them, you know, and they're going to have some fund managers mad at them if they get themselves in the middle of, well, that's already happened to an extent with that, but not corporate. It was with that Corman, you know, the the Corman. They got someone on their board that wanted to politicize, what was it, Bob? Something, and I think it was religious-oriented. They will lose, and I talked with the Kansas City Corman people, and they were losing public support. They were losing their contributions. I mean, some guy like Chick-fil-A CEO, maybe he doesn't mind stepping in the middle of it. But you know what I mean? They start stepping in this, they're going to have some employees mad that there's praying and some not mad if that's where it goes. They're going to have some customers mad because the board is giving to churches. And they're not going to buy. They don't want that stuff. That's a public affairs nightmare. So I'm just saying, I sort of get excited when I see it creeping towards the corporate boardrooms, because a lot of them, they don't want it.
I mean, we haven't talked in a while, and I would actually like to ask you, just get your thoughts on a couple of issues where I think that you can probably hold forth with some real expertise. To Wit Volkswagen.
Oh, God, that's going to be a case. That's going to be one of my cases. The minute I heard intention, I was, blogging out. Well, there you go, intention. It's, they're cooked. I mean, I'm not saying they're done, because some say the German government doesn't want them to be done. But what I can tell you is something you already know, Bob. It's the same story I see. Ford, Firestone, Pinto, I mean, the brakes with GM, the ignition thing with GM, Challenger and Morton Thiokol and NASA. I mean, it's the same story on the inside. Once you get your hands on the facts, it's the same thing. And so it's the same playbook. Except the difference is they're saying they knew.
There were hearings on Capitol Hill today.
Yeah.
The CEO of Volkswagen America testified about how he's been proud to work at Volkswagen and morals and ethics and quality and have always been his pole star and his lodestone.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about how much money Volkswagen was setting aside. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hear whether he was a Republican or a Democrat, but a New York congressman said, if you have to buy back every one of those cars at $40,000 a pop, I think you're orders of magnitude off in the money you have set aside.
Yeah, 11 million cars all over the world is what I've heard.
Yeah, I mean, so this affects their diesel engine. And I used to be a big fan of the Volkswagen diesel engine.
Yeah.
I've been somewhat disabused of it since when I started learning about fine particulate matter.
Well, they also came out with the report you played tonight from Brad and was it Desi? Someone has estimated how many deaths there were because of the that software that made it seem like Volkswagen was compliant with EPA regulations. So they're actually now in the news estimating how many people have died because of it. I don't know how they come up with those numbers, but there are people who can, apparently.
It's the glory of statistical analysis.
Yeah, and that's not even, I mean, that's death. That's not injuries or bad health. That's going to be a classic case. And that's just a real shame. And the shame of it is my understanding is, and I'm not getting my hands in this case, at some point more seriously than I have now, because I'm involved with my students doing other cases right now, but we're keeping our eye on this. And what I have heard from credible news outlets is that they discovered this problem, I don't want to say by accident, but they weren't looking to screen or do a check. It wasn't it just some check a group, not even maybe inside the EPA was doing
it? Oh, no, it wasn't inside the EPA. It was...
Yeah,
it was an outside group that just, I guess, got curious about the numbers, and started looking into it, and bang, they got caught.
That's the worst part of it to me.
But see,
leave it to chance that someone might, check into something. But
and you know what? That's very un-German. Leaving something to chance.
Well. That's weird. It is. Uh-huh. Yeah, but
let's remember that the one of the most affected vehicles is, of course, the diesel Passat, which is manufactured in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're in Tennessee, and here in Merca, we hate us some job-killing regulations.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point.
So I wonder if the culture sort of metastasized across the Atlantic.
Well, and I'm wondering something else. I mean, I don't wear a tinfoil hat or anything, but you bring up a good point. I mean, and I had thought of that, leaving that to chance with so much at stake. But if people know the EPA is not going to look into it because they're captured and or weakened or defunded, and if they think the EPA is just not doing the checks, and the back deal with EPA, now I'm not saying I have a shred of evidence, but that would explain the brazenness of a company just saying, oh, we've complied with EPA. And
but so I mean, when a big player, I mean, Volkswagen is no small fry when it comes to, I mean, they own it's Volkswagen. They own Volkswagen, Porsche, and Audi. They're a big producer of automobiles. I got to thinking about Volkswagen when you were talking about WorldCom. Does this have the power to rattle the market?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't been watching that, so I can't say. I mean, I didn't get out in time and have that big, you know, win and avoiding the market tragedy with WorldCom because I know so much about the market. That was just kind of like an intuitive hit. I don't watch the market that much anymore to know. I don't know. The market may have already absorbed it as far as I know. I don't know where they're listed. So I'll have to watch for that. I've got my teacher stuff and fixed funds and stuff, and I have to admit I just don't watch the market anymore.
Well, let me take you to a different place then, but it's still within the larger universe of your expertise. Back on Moran Monday, I mentioned the fact that those nine unelected lawyers in black robes, the Supreme Court was back in session because they come back into session on the first Monday in October.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a great movie out there called First Monday in October with Jill Clayburgh and Walter Matthau. Walter Matthau.
Oh!
Yeah, it's a fun watch.
He's a hoot.
It's a good movie. If you like, you know, government, you know, D.C. kind of oriented. Yeah.
Mm.
But anyway, one of the things they did is they refused to hear the appeal of the Obama administration Justice Department of a circuit court who threw out the convictions of a couple of guys who had been popped for insider trading relating to insider information on Dell and NVIDIA. NVIDIA is a big manufacturer of video graphics.
Yeah.
Graphics cards, things like that. And the circuit court's holding, which the Supreme Court let lie, was that these two hedge fund guys were too far attenuated from the actual insider information that maybe they didn't know it was insider information.
Yeah, it's possible, actually, because those insider trading laws are, you know, they're really targeting board of directors, members of the board of directors who are sitting there at the meeting making these decisions. And so I don't know the chain of events of where these hedge guys were in that. I mean, I don't know how they got the information, but the way we usually handle that, like I teach white collar crime in my professional ethics class, and so we're looking at insider trading and stuff, and it's everything I've ever seen about it is they're really talking about people on the boards who are deciding this, and they're not supposed to be talking to anyone, or they're not supposed to be acting on it. So I can't go any further than this because I don't know where these guys were in the chain of information. I mean, there is that. I mean, I don't know as a point of law, you know, how removed they were from the people on the inside making the decision because they're hedge fund people, you know? So
yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know.
It didn't bode well.
Well, okay, so the original court, they were convicted, and then it was appealed.
Right.
So So that, yeah, I can't really go there because that tells me there's a point of law which is subject to, apparently, interpretation. I mean, all I can tell you, it would be much cleaner if we're talking about what we call insiders, you know, like board members. A board meets and decides on a new product or a merger and acquisition, and it's not supposed to leave the room, and they're not supposed to trade on it. But you know, the House of Representatives, they can. They can trade on information they hear in those meetings they have. That's a whole other thing. That's a whole other thing. But, yeah, I can't really say because I'm hearing two things. I'm not a lawyer, and one judge is interpreting it as insider trading, and then two courts are not, including the highest one. Well, they didn't. They just refused to hear it, right? I mean,
the legal term is denied cert.
Yeah. So all I can say is it's usually when we talk about it in ethics, we're really talking about board members and not trading, you know, on information related to decisions they're making in the boardroom. So, hey, Bob, could I, there's something, if you don't mind, could I tell you something different than what we just were talking about?
Oh, absolutely. Change the subject at will.
Well, I mean, because I originally called to mention this, because I think the Horn members would be interested in it, and you as well. So I guess you'll never guess who I had a burger and beer with Tuesday night.
Do tell.
Yeah, Thomas Frank.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was so cool. This lecture series that I'm involved with, I'm on the steering committee. We decided to bring him in, and so, and we decided that a year ago. That's how these things, you know, takes that long to get it all set up and get him secured and all. But anyway, so the chair, so he was here Tuesday, and the chairwoman of this committee got ill and couldn't host him. Well, I'm on the committee, and so I was going to be involved in his visit, you know. I mean, I knew I was invited to the small dinner before his lecture. There were five of us, and I knew I was invited to that. But then they called and said, well, you'd be his host because the chairwoman is ill. And I'm like, yes, I'll be his host. And so I met him at the hotel, and we had a little quiet dinner right before I walked into the lecture hall. And then he was great. What an engaging person. He's working on his fourth book, and he was talking about it. He was speaking of it during the lecture, which was well attended, and he, you know, he was basically, the lecture was called, the title was Snoozing Through the Liberal Hour. He really ripped the liberals to shreds.
Well, I imagine we probably had it coming.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he lives in D.C., outside of D.C. now, and he, you know, he watches things, and he's just like, I mean, at some point during the lecture, I tried to listen carefully because he was great. He was so energetic, and he's sardonic. When you look at how people review his stuff, they always say sardonic, you know. He deals with irony brilliantly. He's like, well, people are trying to wonder why Obama does this or that. He goes, well, I've looked at it this way, I've looked at it that way, blah, 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 blah. He goes, he does it because he wants to. He's one of them. I mean, he just comes out with these.
Yeah.
Anyway, along the line, he mentioned Appalachia, and he was making a larger point about how there used to be, you know, working people in the Democratic Party, and you could, you know, count on them as part of the party's impetus.
The broader coalition. Yeah, yeah. Joe Bajant remarked brilliantly on it, and you know, Jim Webb talked about it.
Yeah. Well, and but on a personal level, I mean, I thought the lecture was great. His next book comes out in April, and I had written him in advance of his coming to introduce myself. And I mean, and Carol will know what I'm talking about. He grew up in Mission Hills. My family's from Mission Hills, and I grew up in Leawood. And so he went to what's called Shawnee Mission East. So did I, different times. But so, I mean, we're people of privilege. I mean, we're people of privilege who've turned against our kind, basically. I mean,
class. I think the phrase is class traitors.
Yeah, well, whatever. I mean, he grew up in Mission Hills. Rush Limbaugh used to visit his uncle. Or, let's see, do I have that right? I went out for a beer. I only had half a beer. I was trying to, you know, and he was telling me about his days in Mission Hills, and he was like, it was either his neighbor or uncle, but whoever lived behind them, he said, Rush Limbaugh would come visit.
Right, because Rush, once upon a time, sold hot dogs for the in the stands for the Kansas City Royals or something.
I don't know I forgot to ask him what year. But another thing is, I read What's the Matter with Kansas, and so did my son, because we knew where Frank was from, and it's a perspective we appreciate. My son's a progressive, I'm a progressive, and I don't think I met a Democrat till I was 24. I mean, I'm really serious, because of where I grew up. And so in the book What's the Matter with Kansas, Frank, he was explaining over a beer, he was telling me that, and at that time I had the cultural Marxist from the English department at the table too. It was just a small group. I think there were five of us, five besides me, and five others besides me and Thomas, and I had walked him around campus in the dark before that, because he said to me three times, he said, I haven't had a chance to see the campus. So I said, I'll walk you around campus tonight, you know. So it was sweet. You know, he was very interested in the buildings and the history and very engaging. And so he was saying that when he wrote What's the Matter with Kansas, he wrote about all the people in Mission Hills that went to jail, that were in, you know, for white-collar crimes, like insider trading and stuff. He got such a backlash from his own, you know, home suburb, you know. He, you know, the mayor came out denouncing the book and defending the population of Mission Hills. My aunt and uncle were in Mission Hills, and they had a cook, and they had a, I don't know what they called them then, but someone who waited on them. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of wealth and privilege there. And it just steamed the people of Mission Hills that Frank would say, yeah, there's a lot of criminals there too. Not my aunt and uncle, not his father. He visited his father. He drove here from Mission Hills because he visited his father. And it was just so much fun. I had such a good time. He is so funny, acerbic. And it was my birthday, and I was just like,
oh, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Well, that was Tuesday, but I was just like, all I thought about in terms of my birthday, besides the fact my son sent me a bouquet, and I'm on my way to see him and his family tomorrow, all I could think about is, this is the best birthday present I've ever had.
Oh, you were you channeled your inner fangirl.
Inner
fangirl. Fangirl.
I don't know what that's.
It's a modern call. Fanboy, fangirl.
Well, I like talking. I relate to him because we have kind of the same energy patterns. I've noticed that. Well, he's very approachable. He's kind of prone to these energy bursts, you know, which I appreciate for some reason. And he did that in his lecture. And then, you know, by the time I was into my beer, and because somewhere in the middle of his lecture was talking about, well, maybe something about microbreweries in Kansas, and wouldn't a beer be nice? And so one of the people on the committee leaned over from her chair and whispered in my ear, do you think you can get him a beer after this? And I said, I think I can arrange that.
I think I can do that.
We drove him down to a tap house where they brew their beer downtown, this historic downtown district. But he was so fun. And so there's this cultural Marxist sitting next to us. And this is so Kansan. And I don't know what Thomas thought of this, but when I walked him around campus, there was this kid from the lecture. It was a well-attended lecture. This kid, I eventually asked him his name, and his name is Gibb, and we couldn't shake him. He wasn't invited to be with us, but he kept tagging along, and we weren't going to turn him away. So someone put him in the car and took him down to the brewery, and he sat with us having a beer with Thomas Frank. And
you made his life.
None of us knew him. But we were just like, well, this kid wants to be here, and Thomas doesn't care. And the kid just had a fruit cup. He didn't try to order beer because I don't think he was old enough. I don't know. And he just absorbed it, and I thought, well, this is funny. And then at some point during the conversation, I remember Thomas just looked at me. I'm going to say this out of context. It didn't have to do with our group in particular, but he had a good time at Kansas State. I mean, you know, I mean, that was an audience who appreciated him, related to him, out here in the middle of, you know, Kansas. And he didn't spare Sam Brownback. He didn't spare the Republicans. He swore during the lecture. He said those goddamn this and that. And we were just like sitting there taking it in.
I just had a note from Carol who said, "I'll admit it, Diane, you were starstruck."
I really appreciated him because I admire his work, and he's sort of a little. He's not bohemian exactly, but he's got. Well, here, this will show you why I like him. At some point during we're having a beer, and he leans over and he goes, "You know, Kansan people are really very interesting." You know, he's just kind of trashed our politics. Well, yeah, it needs to be trashed. And who came to the dinner? That little dinner we had before I walked into the lecture hall, our former mayor who had run against Tim Huselkamp, that idiot. So he was at the table. He had run for Congress against Huselkamp, the U.S. Congress, and he lost. So I was hearing all about that campaign. But I could tell from the way Thomas looked at the campus and he asked about the architecture and the, you know, the history, and his degree of long ago is in history. When he said to me, Kansans are very interesting, I find them very interesting. He knows what he's talking about, and it just so happens I've come to that same conclusion. It's not apparent who these people are when you just skim the surface. So when we were coming out of this brewery at the historic downtown with all this, you know, old-fashioned street lights,
were the fountains already blue by then?
Fountains blue.
Yeah,
because we don't have fountains.
No,
we don't have fountains in Manhattan.
Oh, wait, you're in Manhattan. I was thinking Kansas City. I'm so sorry.
No.
I'm an idiot.
Oh, yeah, I grew up in, I know what you're talking about there. It's the city of fountains. No, this little downtown Manhattan. He spoke at Kansas State, you know, in the auditorium. So we're kind of tumbling out about 10 o'clock from, you know, this tap house. I only had half a beer, but what I did next, you'd think I'd had many, but before I did this thing I did, you know, we kind of tumbled out of the brewery, and someone mentioned the book, What's the Matter with Kansas? There were the elderly women standing on the sidewalk under a streetlight, you know, at 10 o'clock. They were still talking before, I guess, they were going to go their separate ways. And they started saying, well, we can tell you what's the matter with Kansas. And they started talking. They had no idea they were talking to the guy who wrote the book.
Oh, my God. But you know what? That's beautiful.
He was cool. I mean, he's cool with it. So I was just on a natural high by that time. The conversation was so stimulating, and so this lawyer from Topeka who came in was putting Thomas in the car to drive him back to the hotel. I was done hosting, you know, I'd done my hosting and loved every minute of it. And then, so they're kind of in the middle of this long street that's our historic downtown. They're putting Thomas in the car putting him in. He had half a beer, too. No one was, you know, he didn't need putting in the car, but they're...
I love you, man! Yeah.
And they're putting Gibb, this student, in the car. No one knows who he is, you know, where he needs to go. And so the cultural Marxist English professor is down on one end of the street, and I'm on the other end of the street, 10 o'clock at night, and Frank and company are in the middle of the street, And I, you know, for some reason, as a Marxist, that's how I identify him.
Yeah.
He wants to do research with them. I'm like, yeah, I could do Marxist research from a business perspective. Anyway, I yell, I'm so glad I know what Waiting for Godot is all about. I yell it down the street at 10 o'clock at night, and he's like, what? And so I keep yelling it, and he keeps walking closer, and I keep walking closer, and I said, you know, it is kind of, I'm like, this will, I will cherish the memory, the night I yelled down the street, I'm so happy to know what Waiting for Godot is all about.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm pretty sure that doesn't happen down University Avenue in Tuscaloosa.
I don't know, but I wanted to tell you about it while I was still feeling the magic. And I'm around people who write books, Bob. I mean, I was on the phone with John Ruggie at Harvard because he was in charge of getting the latest Human Rights Convention passed in 2011 for the United Nations. You know, he's on our list. He's thinking about coming in. I mean, I'm really not starstruck. I talk with these kind of people, you know, but I like Thomas Frank. I like where he comes from and where he's gravitated towards, and I don't have anything to sell, but his next book's coming out in April, and it'll be good. So that's my report from the middle of Kansas. Yeah.
You know what, that image, the way you described it, Diane, it was such a cinematic thing. I mean,
oh, really?
I've never seen the main drag in Manhattan, Kansas, but it just unfolded for me. Was it raining?
Oh, no, a clear night. I had walked him around campus for half an hour. It was a beautiful night, clear and 60 degrees. It couldn't have been more perfect. And I'm glad I painted a picture because the campus was also pretty, and he enjoyed that. But it was so cool that we tumble out of the little brewery tap house, and someone says, "What's the matter with Kansas?" And three elderly women start engaging us and telling us what's the matter with Kansas. With Thomas Frank standing there. I mean, when I think of that, see, I love magical moments like that. I love that. To me, it's like better than going to the movies or going to a play. I mean, to me, that's theater. That's street theater. And I think that's why I screamed down the street, "Thanks for explaining Waiting for Godot to me." Because at dinner, I had said, "I don't understand Waiting for Godot." And he said, "Well, some friend of the, you know, it wasn't Bertolt Brecht. Someone produced that in San Quentin, and they got it." And I'm like, "Oh, I see. Oh, I get it now."
Oh, my! This is okay. So this should be titled "My Zen Dinner with Thomas Franks
and the Marxist."
Right, and you know, it's also the it's the setup line to a joke too. A Marxist English professor and Thomas Frank walk in, and a business ethicist walk into a bar.
And Gibb, don't forget the student.
Yeah, okay, we're running out of time, but I got one thing about the kid, and I hate myself for thinking this way.
Yeah.
Be careful about that.
But what about what?
Well, like the unknown kid who just, you know, tags along.
Oh, I know. He's a little angel, actually.
Okay, so you knew that, but. I hate it, but I live in Merca.
I know.
You know what I'm thinking, and so does the whole family commune congregation.
Mayor had asked us about, you know, are there guns on campus, and none of us, you know, all of us were like, yeah, we have to think about that, but it didn't deter any of us, but we were all thinking about it. Yeah, this guy had been in the lecture room, had hung out afterwards, and yeah, I know, but it's so Kansas State. We're so egalitarian with the students. I swear to God, sort of baked in, and he was a little.
Well, you just make me envious, Diane. And I'll say this: I'm a fan. Okay, I am a fan of Diane. I want to have half a beer with you.
Half a beer. I don't know why just half, but the conversation was so good. Yeah, I wish I could have a half a beer with you too, Bob. It would be a hoot. Who knows what kind of theater would unfold, but it's the magic of certain people and combinations It was fun, and I thought maybe that you and the Horn listeners would appreciate hearing about Thomas Frank. He's a cool guy.
One last thing, just to roll back on our previous conversation, just so you'll know, our Horn Family Commune congregation member Asa here in West Virginia just dropped me a note and reminded me, because I wasn't for sure, so I didn't want to say it, but yeah, the folks who dropped the dime on Volkswagen.
Yeah.
West Virginia University.
All right. Oh, wow. Good research, Asa.
Oh, and and Carol says she wants to have the other half of the beer with you.
Yeah. I'll keep it cold.
Yeah. And you know what? That could be a podcast. Half a beer with Diane.
Oh my God.
And it starts with the sound of like beer coming out of a tap. Just whoosh, yeah. That's a half. Knock it off, buddy. Yeah.
Oh, you're good at this. You're good at this. You don't know how many times I've wanted to say to someone, my enterprise is better than yours, is bigger than yours because of what you said about the marching band. I don't know if you remember that.
Absolutely. Yes.
And I, you know, it's come to mind as something to quip if someone's bugging me, but
Well, no, and just remember, if anything does happen, remember to take Ben Carson's advice, Diane, and tell him, point the gun at the minimum wage kid across the counter. I'm not the right guy.
Jesus Christ.
I know. Makes you crazy.
I can't speak.
What a delightful conversation this has been.
Oh, good. I'm glad you liked it. I really wanted to work in about Thomas Frank because it's an unusual opportunity. And
are there photographs?
Photographs. Yeah, we videotaped it. Oh, that some night I'll
No. You gotta have it. Diane, please tell me there's a Thomas Frank and Diane selfie.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. But there's a video of his lecture. Sorry. I didn't. Actually, someone in the audience was having me take a picture of him and Frank after the lecture, and I didn't even think of. I'm standing up there with Thomas Frank telling him. There were curtains behind him. I was saying, maybe you should pretend like you're the Wizard of Oz and then come out to the audience. You know, I just felt like I could be this way with him. And then he got into the bimetallic standard, and we started talking about it, and it was fun. Anyway, I better let you go for sure.
All right, Diane, you have a wonderful evening.
Oh,
take care.
Thanks for letting me report.
And safe travels to the other apple.
Yeah, thank you. Okay.
All right,
ciao.
Bye now. The marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, and I have a feeling she's getting a selfie stick. hey, here's a little program note before we run out the door because it's 2 minutes past and I've run over. But Malloy doesn't start till 5 after, so we're good. Mike's going to be a rerun tomorrow night, I am told. And with that being the case, send me some input, please. Send me some feedback. I need participants. Anybody want to have an epic extended Friday on the front porch tomorrow evening? We haven't done one of those in a while. If you're up for it, let me know. Shoot me a note, Facebook, Twitter, email, what have you. Just let me know. Thanks very kindly to Bob in Texas for the Have a Show on Me this evening. Thank you again for getting us out of the hole to Margaret over in the sandbox. Thank you, one and all, for your subscriptions and your ongoing support. Everybody is what keeps this going. Y'all keep this going. I don't keep this going. You do. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. And, it is. It's time to get out of here. Always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.